Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back David Albrecht to the podcast. Welcome back, David.
Thank you, James.
So David, you are a consultant with AIM Consulting, which is really focused on asset management. You know, in the past you were on, we talked about asset management. You continue to produce a lot of great things on LinkedIn and related to asset management. And you always incorporate those with an image, which helps cement that those concepts you're talking about. Although very brief, can you give us a introduction to your background, how long you've been with asset management, all that stuff?
Thank you for having me on the show, James. I've been doing asset management in various forms for about 25 years. And over that period of time, I've been involved in maintenance optimization strategies, development of asset management plans, capital planning, stakeholder engagement, decision analysis. So I've really had the I've been fortunate, I think, to have touched on a large number of the 39 subject areas of asset management.
All right, excellent. And those 39 subject areas, you know, you can find them in the Global Forum on Maintenance and Asset Management. You can find them in some of the IAM stuff. You can find them in a variety of different places for those that aren't familiar with them. Now, those 39 subjects, they're all aiming to balance three areas. What are those three areas we're seeking to balance in asset management?
That's a fantastic question, James. Rather than the word balance, I'm going to refer to it as making optimized trade-offs. We are always making trade-offs when we work in constrained environments. And the trade-offs that we're making, or the balance we're trying to achieve, to use your term, is really between there's three different ways to look at that. There's the balance or the optimized trade-offs between cost, risk, and performance. There's another way to look at it in terms of the triple bottom line of economic, social, and environmental factors. And one can go further and say that we're trying to balance short-term needs, medium-term needs, long-range needs, and also we're trying to balance and optimize between strategic, tactical, and operational endeavors within our organization. So there's a lot of balancing and the balancing going off in an asset management context.
All right. And, you know, when I typically think of that balance, I always think of, you know, cost, risk, and performance. We're trying to optimize those trade-offs between those three. And what I really wanted to talk to you today about is that risk portion. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about the risks. What does that trade-off mean to risk? And a lot of things like that. So with asset management focused on managing risks, what is risk?
You know, the simplest and the most concise definition is in ISO 55000. And the definition there is risk is the effect of uncertainty on the organization's objectives. So the two key words there are uncertainty and objectives. So anything that will impede an organization's ability to effectively execute on its objectives is a risk.
All right, excellent. Now, lots of organizations typically think of risks as only negatives. Is it only negative, or is there positive aspects to the risk?
Well, if you look back at that word uncertainty, uncertainty by definition means that good things can happen and bad things can happen that you were uncertain about. So strictly speaking, the definition of risk does contemplate positives as well. However, practically though, the exercise of risk management is historically and traditionally been focused on the negatives and the unpleasant hazard events that occur within an organization. But as organizations mature, the entire risk paradigm can include positive outcomes as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, some of those positive outcomes could be that we have way more demand for our product than we thought we did. But that also presents various risks that we have to manage to make sure we can deliver the product to the market and so on and so forth. It's not just that equipment failure or
you know, not having the right level of funding, those sorts of things. Now, is risk management focused strictly on the assets that we're managing, or is it focused on the system as well, the people behind those assets? Where is it focused?
Risk permeates everything within asset management. It touches on every kind of decision and every dimension and every facet. So therefore, in answer to your question, James, it affects assets. It affects the asset management system, which is the processes, the collection of the processes and procedures that the organization uses, and affects people. So it's touching on everything.
All right. And with it touching on everything, do you typically see organizations lean towards more focusing on their asset-related risks or the asset management system risks or people? Where do they have a tendency to focus?
One way to think of this is, one simple framework is to think of it as two levels of risk, or actually three, but I'll start off with the two-level process: enterprise level risks and asset level risks. The enterprise level risks, I'll give you some examples, because they're the type of risk events that affect every asset within the organization across all different departments. So enterprise level risks will be things like a union strike, a pandemic, terrorist attacks, shareholder revolt, and just any major impact on the organization's reputation or on the organization's balance sheet. That's something that may make the organization go bankrupt, for example. Asset risks are those risks that typically occur within an individual asset class or an individual department within an organization. It could include things like property damage, injuries to staff, service interruption, contamination of soil, air, or water. So there's a clear distinction between the risks that are happening at the enterprise level that actually cascade across the entire organization, such as a terrorist attack or a pandemic, versus assets that affect certain assets in certain geographical locations.
All right, excellent. So it's at different levels within the organization. You might have enterprise-wide, site-specific. You might have different aspects of it. Now, what types of risk do you typically see within a risk register related to asset management system? Is it around the communication and change that we're adopting asset management? Is it funding? What do you typically see in there?
Well, I'd like to take a step back. I would like to go a little bit higher than the risk register and talk about the risk architecture. In ISO 31000, the phrase risk architecture is that all-encompassing term to include three things: the risk management principles, the risk management framework, and the risk management process. And just to quickly explain the difference between the principles, the framework, and the process, which collectively are the risk architecture. So the principles are things like, we as the organization will ensure that risk management forms part of all the decisions we make. We as an organization will ensure that our risk management is based on good information. So these are the principles to guide the organization and how it's going to use risk in everything that it does. The framework is the commitment that the organization makes to risk management, then the design of the process that's going to follow, the implementation of that process, and then the monitoring and continual improvement of that. Then the specific process itself would include things like, what's the formula we're going to use to calculate risk? How are we going to grade the likelihood of something happening? How are we going to grade the consequences? How are we going to arrive at criticality scores for our assets? So I think it's important that we recognize that a risk register is just one small piece, but a very, very fundamental piece of the overall risk architecture.
Absolutely. You know, just like asset management, we have our asset management principles that are called out in the policy. We have those same things for risk. We have to decide that decision-making framework. How do we quantify severity, probability, and those other risks that we may have? So we have to have all of that in place. And it's vital that organizations do that consistently so we get consistent results and outputs of that. Now, within that framework, how do organizations typically quantify risk? Is it based using, you know, your traditional risk priority numbers? Do they convert everything to a financial impact? How do they typically quantify these risks?
Well, one way to look at it is either a qualitative way of quantifying or a quantitative. Qualitative is really where most organizations start their risk management journey. They will say, for example, we have a high risk of this type of event happening, or we have a low risk. So they use words like high, low, medium, which are linguistic terms. On the other hand, as organizations get more sophisticated, they convert those linguistic scales into numerical scales, and they say, we have a 93% probability of this event happening, or this asset gets a criticality score of 27.2. So it's the movement from a qualitative description to a quantitative description that's very important. And it takes time. It takes a lot of data, and it takes a lot of organizational collaboration internally amongst the subject matter experts to actually apply specific measurements to risk. Now, the journey's got to start somewhere. So in answer to your question about how do organizations quantify, typically what I'm seeing is a hybrid. It depends on the quality of the data that they have available. It also depends on the level of maturity in the organization as to whether they're using RPNs or financial, doing a monetized. Monetized risk is a very sophisticated evolution of risk where the organization actually attaches dollar values to risk events and can actually calculate residual risks based on dollar values, even which goes even beyond quantitative expressions of risk.
Yes, and I find sometimes when you monetize those risks, sometimes those conversations are not easy to have. You know, think of a health and safety risk where someone may be injured or, you know, pass away as a result of that risk. Organizations that are going to that monetization actually have dollar figures for those. And that is a difficult conversation to have.
It certainly is, because there are differences of opinion on how to calculate and how to translate these monetary values. And there's invariably a lack of sufficient data to actually move away from subjective opinions towards a more objective, impartial expression of risk. That's one of the major challenges within risk management.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value added work you are doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
Now, where do organizations struggle in this risk management piece? Is it getting the framework together, getting those principles together? It is actually identifying risks and coming up with good mitigating actions or following through on those actions? Where do they struggle?
I think they struggle in a number of areas. One area is data quality. Oftentimes, organizations don't have sufficient data to help support the risk management process. However, they, as I noted earlier, they can certainly start with a qualitative expression of risk, ask the subject matter experts within the organization to give their opinions on how risky an event might be. And people can say, there's a high probability of that or a low probability. So that's a good way to start. So the first one is the lack of data. The second one is subjectivity around how to score risks. Until the organization has actually developed its framework, there may be differences of opinion, particularly amongst different asset classes. So, for example, the way one department might want to score and measure risk may be different from another. So finding consistent rules and procedures that can be applied across the organization. But the third piece, and this is the important one, I think this is the most difficult one, is when people describe a risk, They often struggle to determine what am I actually describing. Strictly speaking, we should be describing the hazard event. So it's important to recognize what is the risk event versus what is the cause of that event and what are the consequences of that event. So I've sometimes seen risk registers where the event is not being analyzed, but the cause of the event is being analyzed. So it's very important that the organization understand the concept of a causal or a causal chain. So we know what's the root cause of the of whatever the event is, what's the event we're analyzing. So if the event, for example, is a union strike within an organization, we need to understand what caused that union strike. We need to understand what are the consequences of that union strike. And all the analysis that we do, when we do a risk analysis and a risk assessment and develop risk treatments, they all revolve around the event, the hazard event. So that's one of the challenges I find is having people understand what is it that we're trying to articulate? What are the hazard events themselves? And how do they differ from the causes of those events and the consequences of those events?
All right, excellent. So the lack of data, how do we actually score this risk? And then describing the hazard event, not all that other stuff.
Well, describing it, recognizing how the event itself must be distinguished separately from the cause of the event and the consequences. So understanding in this chain of things that go on in our organization, where is the event? That's a very, very deep topic, and I don't want to throw us off course on this podcast, but that I think I have found to be one of the significant challenges for organizations.
All right, excellent. Now, one of the questions that I had come up was, you mentioned how to score risk and how some departments or groups that are responsible for different asset classes, how they want to score it versus this other group. When we're doing this at an organizational level, should those individual asset classes or groups or departments have their own method of quantifying, or should we be consistent in that quantification of risk regardless of department or asset class within the organization?
Well, I've seen risk management journeys unfold in two different ways. I've seen the bottom-up approach where one particular department within an organization goes on the journey of developing a risk framework, develops its own rules around risk, and scores the risks within that one department. The other departments see what happened, and then they emulate what happened, and then eventually it rolls upwards in the organization, and we get to what would be an enterprise level framework that ensures we have consistency across the departments. The other model is top down, where the C-suite or the leadership team develops the overarching framework, and then each department goes off on its own risk quantification journey in alignment with the enterprise framework. What tends to happen, I find, in a lot of organizations is sort of a hybrid of a top down and a bottom up. The organization establishes a policy to guide risk very, very generally within the organization, has a very, very high level sort of business interruption plan or business continuity plan, but doesn't provide a lot of detail about how to go about doing the risk. So each department then has to interpret that policy and has to interpret that business continuity plan to match their individual asset class. Eventually, as the organization gets more mature, we find that the top-down policy and the top-down business continuity plan end up connecting and having a good line of sight with the individual risk registers that grow from the bottom up within each department.
All right. So multiple different ways to approach it, but we have to make it work for the organization, correct?
That is correct, yes.
So with, us having an ISO standard, for 31,000, with us having lots of information and data available on risk, why is risk management so difficult for some organizations or some people?
Because, as human beings, we're managing risk of the risks of our own human bodies every day, and we're doing it intuitively. And we tend to bring that same intuitive management to risk within our organizations as well. And risk can be managed intuitively. We all know it's common sense that if you don't follow safe practices, people can get injured. Building structures can be subject to fires. There can be regulatory compliance violations. We all know this. A lot of it's pretty much common sense. But the challenge is to translate that common sense and formalize it into a documented procedure so we can ultimately quantify. Ultimately, what we want to get from is an unquantified measure of the risk within our organization to a quantified statement. And it's getting people to move from intuitive management of risk to actually formalized management of risk. Actually taking the information from the subject matter experts and placing that on paper. And when we start to try to quantify these risks on paper, we start to realize just how slippery a slope risk management really is. It really is a slippery slope, because what you think in your head seems like a very simple concept. I got to practice safe procedures where somebody can get injured. But when you start to write that down and start to say, okay, well, how likely is it somebody's going to get injured? If they get injured, is it going to be a near miss? Is it going to be a recordable injury, or is it going to be a lost time injury? And how many days of lost time will occur? That's when what we start to realize how challenging, but at the same time, how rewarding risk management can be. It is very challenging, but it pays tremendous dividends back to the organization, particularly because we can use it to write business cases. It allows us within the organization to write very robust and defensible business cases to support the decisions we make. At the end of the day, it's about supporting decision making and tying back those decisions to our organizational objectives.
Yes, absolutely. That's what we're trying to do, is what is the risk of those organizational objectives? How are we going to do that optimized trade-off? All those things. Now, one of the things I found is that sometimes it's difficult to get people thinking about all the different types of risks out there. So what's the one tip or trick you have for organizations and people that enables them to identify the right risks at the right level of the organization?
Well, that's an interesting question, James. I don't have an immediate answer to you about the right risks. I think what I have found with organizations, we usually start with what people can immediately relate to as a risk, and let's say it'll be safety. Safety of personnel within the organization, or safety of third-party contractors or other kinds of stakeholders. And we start to build the risk framework around those risks that are most intuitive to people and most obvious. And then we move from safety onto risks that relate to business interruption, and then risks that relate to organizational reputation. So it's sort of a journey of moving from the very intuitive risks to the ones that are perhaps less intuitive. And so typically what we will do is once the organization has agreed on a risk framework and a risk process, we will start to build a risk register. It does not need to be an exhaustive register. What's actually important is that even if the risk register only has one or two risks, what we want to do, at least as a starting point, we want to test those risks within the frameworks. In other words, we want to identify a risk of a hazard event and then run through all the calculations in the risk framework to see what the outcome is. What's the risk score that results by populating one or two hazard events into the risk framework? And then that then serves as a tremendous learning exercise for the organization. And then once people understand how a risk register is modeled through the risk framework, then people can start to expand those registers over time. So I've seen risk registers start with two or three risks in year one, and then by year three, four, or five, the organization has gone and that risk register has expanded to over 100 risks.
All right, excellent. So we start with those intuitive ones, then we slowly expand it. We don't have to have an exhaustive list right off the bat.
Correct.
Some very good tips there. Now, if you had a magic wand, what is the one thing you would change in how organizations either identify or manage their risks?
I would say get started. Put something down on paper. I've seen so many organizations that they sort of struggle with this paralysis through analysis. They feel that, oh, we don't have good enough data, or we need to have this $100,000 software product to model risk before we can get started. Absolutely wrong. You do not need to have perfect data. You do not need to have an expensive software tool. All you need to do is sit down around a table in a room with some good subject matter experts or some knowledge resources and start to write down what are these risk events, how likely are they to occur, and what's their consequences. And start off with qualitative descriptions. Like I said, use linguistic scales, high, medium, and low. And later on, once you've gone on that journey, you can start to turn those linguistic scales into numerical scales where you're actually scoring your risks on a grade of 1 through 5 or a grade of 1 through 100. So the answer to your question, James, in brief is get started. Start simple. You don't need to be fancy. Recognize that it's a journey. Get your foot out the door. That's all. That I think is the most important thing. Because I've seen so many organizations, they're just too concerned about putting it down on paper because they're worried they don't have the right system to actually model the risks.
And what's interesting is this tip, get started, just start doing something with it, has come up in numerous times with our guests. And it's not just asset management stuff. It could be, you know, PM optimization, spare parts evaluation. Don't worry about getting the system perfect. Just get started, right? Take that first step. And if you don't ever take that first step, you'll never be there.
Correct. You know, there's a wonderful saying, and I often quote this to my clients, a good plan today is better than a perfect plan tomorrow. So don't seek perfection today. Just get started today. Work towards something good rather than something perfect, at least at the outset.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Now, we've talked a lot about risk today. What is the one thing you want our listeners to take away from this conversation that they can go do differently tomorrow? Implement, start on, what is it?
I think the one important thing is to recognize that risk is inescapable. You actually cannot eliminate risk. All you can do, you cannot remove risks. All you can do is become resilient or try to become resilient in the face of those risks and reduce your vulnerability. So the key here is think about how do we as an organization become resilient against those risks and how do we reduce our vulnerability? And you know, resilience is really about the capacity of the organization and the people to survive and adapt in the face of chronic stresses and acute shocks, which risks are. So we've got to identify what are those things that are going to shock our organization or shock our systems or shock our people or our assets, and recognize that we cannot remove necessarily those actual hazard events. They're going to happen. People are going to get injured. There are going to be issues that are going to arise, but we need to be ready. We need to ready ourselves for them, because at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is we're looking to make our organization resilient, and we're trying to actually make our objectives. Remember, back to the definition of the organization's objectives, we want to protect those objectives from being compromised by these risk events. And we want to do so by recognizing that there is some uncertainty about the future. So to try to sum that up, recognize that risk is inescapable. We cannot necessarily remove the risks, but we want to become resilient and adaptable and in the face of those risks.
All right. Excellent words of wisdom. Now, David, I want to thank you first for taking the time to talk to us today about risk. But before we go, where can people find out more about you? Where can they follow you? You know, all that great stuff.
Well, thank you for that invitation, James. I post in social media. I have a website, assetinsights.net, and one of my personal brands is we need to visualize asset management in order to visionize the team, or we need to visualize risk management. So I do publish in social media. I do always try to attach some sort of visual to capture the concepts that I'm trying to communicate. So listeners can find me at assetinsights.net or in social media under my name.
All right. Excellent. David, one last question before you go. Do you have any favorite resources about risk that you want to share with our listeners? Is there a book, a website, a paper that you want to share?
The one thing I would suggest, if anybody really wants to understand risk, is to read the ISO 31000 risk standard. It's not a long document. These ISO standards are typically about 30 pages long. they're pretty compact and pretty dense with good information. If anybody really wants to truly get to the heart of risk management and move themselves forward on this journey, try to get a copy of ISO 31000. There are, unfortunately, no free copies floating out there. Each copy is licensed. So if your organization has a copy, try to obtain that. They can be obtained from various sources.
All right, excellent. Well, David, I will make sure to put links to all the stuff you mentioned, assetinsights.net, your LinkedIn page, the visual post you put on LinkedIn as well as the risk standards. So with that, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about risk. It's a critical part in what we do, whether it's maintenance or asset management, but it scares some people. So I think you broke it down in a way that's going to help our organizations and our listeners take that first step, start driving forward with it. So thank you very much.
And thank you, James. Thank you for this opportunity. Much appreciated.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.